quiser.
Bom dia a todos.
Good morning. So, with the permission of the Deputy Minister of the President of the Republic, we are going to begin our session. I would like to welcome you all to this wonderful room, and thank you very much for participating in this event. Thank you very much. We're now going to start our work. I'm not going to take up much of your time because I know that you didn't come here to hear me. I would like to greet all the members here present, the members of the panel, the President of the National Commission for the Rights of the Child, and youth, Dr. Elena Ramush, and also I would like to greet the Dr. Vidal. And it's a great pleasure having you with us. So very few words to thank you for coming, to send you the greetings from the President of the Republic, but for professional reasons he couldn't be here present. And I'd also like to congratulate the committee commission for having held this initiative. So the topic of this seminar is of great importance in this place where we find ourselves today. The Parliament is constitutionally the representative assembly of all Portuguese, and all Portuguese means all. We're not talking about all adults or all of those who have the right to vote. No, all. And I think that the title of this conference is particularly significant. Here we're not discussing the participation of children in this political decision-making or whether they should participate. No, this is a given. And international documents of the Convention of the Rights of the Child leave this very clearly. But the problem is how. How should children be associated with this political decision-making, which, due to its nature, is of the greatest importance to Parliament? For constitutional reasons, it should be an inclusive decision-making process and participatory decision-making process. And so all of those who are addressees of our decisions should have the possibility to participate in this process, to be included in this process. It is true that the Parliament has made a significant step forward in terms of the inclusion, and so that is the participation of the Youth Parliament, which has motivated the presence of many MPs to go to schools and to have a sort of imitation of the sessions that take place here in those schools. But especially in the area of justice, the participation of children is guaranteed with the regulation of paternal authority and in other cases. Now, what actually brings us here is something different. That is, how could the MPs and decision makers, because this is not the government, is not really my my forte, but how should things move forward in this area? It is interesting to see that if we compare the public sphere with the private sphere, we can easily conclude that the private sphere has a much more, much greater participation. I mean, it's enough for us to have children, for example, to see what happened to the youth of my generation is not what actually happens with the youth of today. So when I was young, a child, nobody would ever asked me what I thought. Not only do we see this relationship quite normal, and children themselves take the initiative to do this, and it's just interesting to see this something in between the public and private sphere. So what is normal in our private life is different and very distant in the public life. It's very relevant to have this reflection today here, and especially the lessons learned from a number of European countries that have a very consistent practice in this area, and that can bring us this experience as a very relevant starting point for our reflection today. As you know, the Parliament is coming to an end of its legislature, and so we can only take advantage of these moments to reflect about what should happen in future legislatures. And so that is why I think that the information that we can gather here today, which is very important, obviously, can be channeled towards those who will become MPs in the next mandate, so that they can I think of things in a much more mature manner than they have, and think of the conditions in which participation of children should be carried out, and so they take and to take significant steps to implement those guidelines. There is a point that I think is fundamental, however. The participation of children in the public decision-making is not only relevant from the point of view of their contribution to the same decision. Children and youth cannot only be seen as the object of political decisions for obvious reasons, but it's also important from the perspective of reinforcing the feeling of citizenship. The younger they are brought to this decision-making process, and the younger they feel that they are important, then the greater their tendency will be to participate in political life. The trend is the trend at the moment is one of abstention, as we can see from the elections, when we have to think about the younger, less up to the years of the age of 25 years old, when you see that there's a total lack of willing to participate in elections. Now, the sooner they begin, then the stronger their feeling of citizenship, and I'm not a specialist in this, and so that once the time that they have to affirm their full citizenship, then I think there will be more conditions for this trend to change. And so the work there, there's an awful lot of political work still to be done. Decision makers cannot take the decisions without being informed. And so there must be a participatory democracy. And this should be felt at all levels, from the youngest to the oldest. And I'm sure that today's contributions will be extremely useful. And as I said, they will no doubt be reflected on by those who will be part of the next legislature. I would like to give the floor to them. I don't know where the order is, says the gentleman. Ambassador, you have the floor.
Thank you very much for the invitation to be present at the opening of this important seminar, calling attention towards the relevance of children in decision-making processes. Norway performs exceptionally well on certain global indexes measuring children's rights, such as Save the Children Index and the Kids' Rights Index. But we are aware of the need to always to do more. I am happy that Norway, through the EA grants, is contributing towards the development of this project that aims at putting children center stage in the discussion of measures and decisions that affect their lives. Adults must recognize children their right to an opinion regarding their own private lives and regarding global resolution that influence their common present and future. And this work must be done at multiple levels, ensuring that information and consultations reach their targets. The Norwegian Ministry of Children and Equality developed a guide to the municipalities for establishing and working with youth councils. This guide provides guidelines that refer to consultation mechanism in general and to how to establish youth councils and forums for youth consultation. Warranting children a space in the decision-making process is ensuring that in future we will have engaged citizens that are aware of their context and familiar with the framework where they operate. And this is safeguarding that your future will be more stable and more enlightened, and also a contribution to better understanding and action on important issues, as we now see with the active involvement by young people on climate change issues. This is an example of young people setting direction for future policies. I want to wish you today a good working seminar and that your conclusions are fruitful and consequent. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Ambassador.
Muito obrigado. Thank you very much, Ambassador. Thank you very much to the Vice President of the Parliament, and I would like to thank you all for having invited us to be here present. And so it's with great satisfaction that from the NASH that we are here together in this event. This seminar has got very relevant. Could you ask the lady to slow down? She's reading a paper that has not been handed into the interpreter, and it's impossible to follow at this speed. This bilateral initiative. Initiative is to promote the well-being of children. The main objective is the protection of children with two general outcomes. On the one hand, the creation of a topic of protection of children's systems, the rights of children, based on the long experience of Portugal and Norway, including the participation of children and hearing their voices on a regular basis. On the other hand, the good practices of partner countries will contribute to improve the consultation of children, the protection of their rights, as well as the tools and resources available in these countries and useful to meet these changes. As the coordinator in Portugal, I would like to give you an overview of the situation in our country and to show you the objectives of this mechanism and to clear up a number of doubts that may have. A grant was entered into between EU, Norway, Liechtenstein, and so through this agreement, which celebrates its 15th anniversary, the three countries became our partners and donors through EU grants and have helped projects through a financial mechanism. Each financial mechanism within the scope of EU grants has a multi-annual project, and and we'll come to close in 2024. It tries to reduce economic disparities in the European context, and on the other hand, aims at for strengthening the links between donors and beneficiaries through EU grants. The donors have a total of 2.8 billion euros to 15 countries, specifically in Portugal. Portugal has about 0.8 million euros, I believe. E-grants support initiatives and sectors with specific needs that are in line with national priorities and European priorities. In Portugal, this period started in May 2017, the Memorandum of Understanding looks at the different areas financed and the different allocations to the different entities involved in their implementation. Now, these entities are, on the one hand, the national management, the focal point, and which implements the grants in Portugal to act as the national focus point and to coordinate the communication of e-grants in Portugal. We work with the financial office in Brussels and with the collaboration of the Norwegian embassy in Lisbon, and the guarantees, audits and acts as the regulatory body. Then the national certification. And so the Memorandum of Understanding would support five programs in Portugal. The Blue Growth, I believe the lady said, Environment, about 24 million euros, the Culture, which has the DG Arts, and has about 9 million euros. And gender equality, that has a allocation of 6 million euros, plus the national contribution. Finally, the Act of Citizens, they aim at projects of the social economy, different axes, and is run by a consortium between the Carlos Gulbenkian Fund, Foundation, and has an allocation of 11 million euros. The Memorandum of Understanding is about 2 million euros, which is run by the National Focal Point, and this is aimed at reinforcing not only the relationships of cooperation already established, but new bilateral interests. There is an open contest for bilateral initiatives that may be of interest to you with every 4 months. And so there will be 12th of September will be the next period of selection. Since the signature of the Memorandum of Understanding, so if you look at the objectives of each one, and you see and there was a signing of the contracts of the first tenders. Now in the launch phase of all the areas, and finally I leave you the suggestion of accompanying all the information to e-grants through our sites, through social networks, are to be informed about the launching of all these tenders, and there's an area where you will be able to find a counterpart from Iceland or Liechtenstein. Thank you very much for your attention, and I hope you have a very good day's work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And now to finish with this opening of the session. Good morning, everyone. And I'd like to start by greeting the Vice President of our Parliament, the Ambassador of Norway to Portugal, the Coordinator of the Financial Mechanism of EE Grants, representatives, several representatives from the CPCJ, which are the National Commission for Youth Protection in Portugal, the National Commissioners, Judge Herman Liader, and also like to greet Joana Marques Vidal, the former prosecutor, and other guests. Holding such a seminar, as Susanna Ramos mentioned, is the launch of the bilateral initiative between Portugal and Norway, designated as promoting the rights of the child in priority areas, and where the National Commission promoting the protection of children and youth intervenes as the promoting entity. 30 years have gone by since the ratification of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and almost all member states of the UN. Much was done, but still a long way to go in terms of children's rights, namely the right to their participation on matters that concern them. The referred convention established what is a child, emphasizing their participation, which no longer are the targets of protection, but have been recognized as a subject with a right to participation. This seminar is to assess the progress concerning children's participation in the decision-making process, both nationally and European and at a European level. The event seeks to identify and assess the main guidelines for a national roadmap which aims at implementing the provisions in the Child Right Convention, not only the UN's Fundamental Rights Charter and also the Council of Europe's Rights of the Child. And we still have a lot to implement within the 2030 agenda of the United Nations, which has selected 16 goals with sustainable development. So that is why this objective, referring to peace, justice, institution, effective institutions, which aim at promoting peaceful and inclusive societies for sustainable development, will provide the access to justice for all and construct effective, responsible, and inclusive institutions at every level will have to include children and youth, which are vital generations, to guarantee that societies in constructions be sustainable. And this part of Objective 16 of Agenda 2030. I'd like to thank the availability and the generosity of all speakers and chairpersons nationally, internationally, that accepted to share with us their approaches and scientific technical experiences on the ground, on the right of children and youth participation in the decision-making, and the main challenges, what can be done so that we could made this participation at different levels, institutions, and so on, in particular with those with direct and indirect impact in their current or future life. And in this situation, it's even more important to listen to their voice and take their voice in consideration, providing the appropriate occasions and processes to participation and children's consultation. I'm waiting for the conclusion of these works, hoping that with knowledge, commitment, and creativity, that a solid step is given in creating new governing models and will allow Portugal to make a significant change in the commitment to involving children in the decisions, concrete solutions, which are decisive for the respect of children's fundamental rights and democratization, modernization of our societies. Thank you very much, and I hope that this session is a good contribution for a good outlook in terms of children and youth participation in public decision making. Thank you very much, Mrs. Odette Severin. So this first part is now over, and now I'm going to pass the floor to our next panel. I'm inviting you to take your seats. So now let's start our conference on the analysis of the 12th article of the Convention on Child's Rights. Raquel Tavares, higher technician from the Documentation Cabinet and Comparative Law of Public Prosecution, and Alexandra Pimenta, Director of Legal Affairs of the Director General of European Affairs of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, that I'm going to give the floor to. So good morning, everyone. Good morning, illustrious participants at this conference. And I have the pleasure to be able to address you, and that is to try to share all this knowledge, which will be shared by our speakers. And I'd like to greet Raquel Tavares and like to underline her commitment in the awareness for human rights, and also underlining the importance of her publications for those that work in these fields, like them, and that are very committed. So I'm going to pass the floor to her, Raquel Tavares. Thank you very much, Alexandra. And I'd like to thank the kind invitation that was addressed to be present at this seminar. And I'd like to greet the members of Parliament that are present in this session and other guests. And I would like to present an analysis of the Article 12 of the Convention on Children's Rights, on the Rights of the Child. The Vice President of our National Commission has already referred to it. It's an article that legally enshrines the right to participation of children, and Portugal is binded too. But I'm going to read, and once that I have to present the article, and it states that all states assure the child who is capable of forming his or own views the right to express those views freely in all matters affecting the child, the views of the child being given due weight in accordance with the age and maturity of the child, and then states, for this purpose, the child shall, in particular, be provided the opportunity to be heard in any judicial administrative proceedings affecting the child, either directly or through a representative or an appropriate body, in a manner consistent with the procedural rules of the national law. This is Article 12. In spite of it being pointed to as the article enshrining participation, it doesn't really speak about the right to participation, but the right of the child to express his or her own views and be heard in judicial administrative proceedings concerning him or her. And this right to participation has been considered, and by the committee, UN Committee of Child Rights, which is the body monitoring this article, and this right to participation is considered as a process including the access of children to information, the right to express to freely express his or her own views in all matters. And more than that, the right to be listened, to be heard, it goes beyond the freedom of expression, the right to be heard or to be listened, and that his or her view is really taken into account. And finally, the right of knowing in what way his or her opinion will influence the proceedings, either the decision process or defining public policies or preparing legislations or other political measures. In light of this article, Article 12, in terms of this convention, the right to be listened, to be heard, has to be ensured within these processes, which concerns the child and the right having his or her the right to express oneself. Article 12 reflects on this right to participation, which is one of the four fundamental principles on the Convention of the Rights of the Child. The other, it's a principle of non-discrimination, the best interest of the child, principle of the right of the child to life, survival, and development as much as possible. What does this mean? It means that it's not just a right, individual right, that each child that has the right to exert it, it's to fulfill, but it's also a principle that should guide the interpretation of all articles of that convention and all obligations assumed by the states in light of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And I'm going to refer to that aspect, to this right later on. So it's something that it shows the obligations assumed by the state parties and which have to have present in adopting, defining any measure policy in terms of children in whatever I feel not expressed in the convention, if affecting the child, if it has to do with the child, and the child has the right to express his or herself and to be heard, to be listened, it goes beyond, and it entails that be taken into considering the child's views. We're not speaking about the duty of that child. The child has the right, and the state parties have the obligation, again, to assure that the child is capable of doing it. It does not entail, and this is very clear, it does not entail that the wishes, children's wishes and wills are necessarily that they've been met. It implies that the child be involved in the decision-making process, be informed about the proceedings and the reasons that led to the decisions being taken. That is, going along the lines that the child has expressed preference or not. And this has been reflected in different national instruments, such as the Law on Protecting Children and Youth, as well as the Fundamental Charter of Human Rights, the EU, and other speakers will refer to this right in other instruments. I'm going to focus on Article 12 of the Convention, and Article 12, in light of the authentic interpretation, if I can mention it, interpretation made by the Committee on the Children's Rights of Article 12. And in the analysis, both in terms of individual cases and also reports which have been submitted by the states, in which the committee indicates if it considers that the states have been fulfilling with this obligation of assuring children's participation or not. And in addition to this casuistic analysis of the situation in each state party, the committee adopted in 2009 a general comment number 12 on the right to be heard, the right the child has to be heard, where it indicates its interpretation of Article 12 and the measures that it considers that the state parties have been binded to, binding in terms of adopting article in light of Article 12. I'm going to indicate some articles. I'm going to indicate some aspects. I will develop some elements of Article 12. Then I'm going to speak about the participation process, the different stages. I will suggest some implementation strategies indicated by the committee, and I'll speak about the context of that will be implemented, requirements to ensure the right to participation. And I will conclude with a brief summary of recommendations made to Portugal when the last report was analyzed, submitted to that committee in 2013, and we have a report will be submitted again in October, next October. And therefore, our situation in this area in terms of child rights will be analyzed, but more recent conclusions will be mentioned later on concerning the implementation of this of Article 12. And the first thing that the committee starts by affirming in its general comment is that Article 12 mentions that the state parties shall assure, the states have to assure, because of the ratification of the convention, have to guarantee, assure this child's right to being heard and for the child to be able to pronounce himself concerning all matters. It's part of what Portugal follows concerning the children. It entails the obligation of creating mechanisms through which the child can mention his or her own views, and also in a private sphere. And more than that, it obliges to take more in terms, to follow more than the formalism, but to take into account the child's views whenever it has to take decisions. Then the article mentions it guarantees the forming of his or own views. This is not a limitation. On the contrary, it imposes the obligation to know if the child has the capacity to form his or her own opinion autonomously and as freely as possible. It also mentions that the states cannot presume and is based on age, which happens frequently, cannot presume that the child is not capable of forming his or her own views. It says the opposite. It should be capable of forming his or her own right and has the right to do it. So it doesn't have to, it's not of the child to prove it has the ability. So it's very important for state parties to find mechanisms, to find non-verbal forms, very important when the child is very young or children with sensorial cognitive disabilities that they have a difficulty in expressing their opinion. And also, the committee mentions that it's not necessary for the child to understand all aspects and consequences. It just has to understand sufficiently well to be able to form autonomously his own views on the matter. And let me repeat, this does not mean that the child has an opinion, that it necessarily has to be followed. But if the child has an opinion or view, it has to be seriously considered. This is the committee's understanding in light of it that Portugal and other state parties have responded in relation to the measures taken within this scope. And then the committee mentions that it's very important to guarantee the child's protection against possible negative consequences of fulfilling this right, because quite often the right to express one's opinion in a given context can entail negative consequences for children, traumas associated to his or her own participation in the process. So it's the state party's obligation to assure the child's protection in anything that has to do with the right to fulfilling that right. And then about the free, the right to express freely those views, to express those views freely, is interpreted by committee as as expressing views without pressure, manipulations, undue, and giving the child the power, if the child wants to express his or her view, it's a right, not a child, it's not an obligation. It entails this free decision making, implies, as we all know, that the child has all the relevant information on questions which are being discussed, on options, possible decisions that can be taken, as well as the consequences and even the conditions it's going to express its views. Is sufficient, adequate information is a prior requirement, so that this right to participation is fulfilled in Article 12. The child can express his own view on all matters affecting the child. This, the world all, exists in the original convention, but this world all does not exist in the Portuguese language. Underlines it very clear in terms of our committee's case law. And dealing with all questions, even those that haven't been previously foreseen in the convention. In the preparatory works of this convention, there were proposals to limit in terms of adoption and so on, and this proposal was rejected because the negotiators of that convention considered that the right should the child should have the right to express his or her views in all matters affecting the child, and clearly we're not limited to any type of process in particular. That is, any questions being discussed, the state parties have the right to assure the children's participation. And then opinions should be taken into account according to the child's age and maturity. The age and maturity of the child. And according to the committee, this requires an individualized case-by-case, an individualized determination of each child. And the committee often repeats that the age by itself will not determine this ability. Can be a guiding principle, but does not determine it, and will depend on assessing the information made available to the child, the experience that the child may have, the context, social, cultural expectations, and the support which is provided to the child. Maturity is considered by the committee as the ability to understand, assess the implications of a concrete issue. As I've mentioned, it's not necessary to have a full understanding that opinion should be considered, should always be considered once that it's been formed, when once the child has it. Not enough to listen to the child. This is another question I like to repeat because the committee mentions it, that it seems important to underline. It's also important to listen to the child, and in terms of basing decisions, and to refer in what measure, to what extent, in what way this opinion, the child's views were taken into account. It's necessary to report, to inform the child, to give the child the feedback. That is how his or her opinion views were considered, either being followed or not. And if it's not followed, if the child's opinion is not followed, as such, it's even more important that this be explained to the child why it was not heard, and why in its best interest it wasn't followed. The right to be heard in judicial and administrative proceedings, which is the number 2, Article 12, is applied once again to all different types of proceedings. The committee mentions parents' separation, custodial issues, adoption, minor justice, social security, migration, asylum, administrative decisions in terms of health, education, environment, life conditions, either started by the child or started by third parties. And the grounds are encouraged to obtain the grounds of in what way the child's views were taken into account, and its consequences. participation in this type of proceeding can take place. And the committee mentioned if possible it should be directly, and in certain cases can be carried out in terms of a representative to another representative or an upper body, parents, social security bodies. But the committee underlines on one hand how important it's to prevent conflicts, a potential conflict of interest, and the importance to transmit that even if the child's views is through a representative, it's fundamental for that represented not to have his or own view, but to be able to express the child's own view, to reproduce the child's view and not his or own, not the representative's view or the or body it represents. So representatives do not represent themselves in their in the proceedings. They represent the child and the child's opinion. The committee recommends, although it's not an immediate obligation of state parties, but it's recommended to define codes of conduct as a useful instrument to be taken into in consideration in these cases. And the article finishes by saying that this right is according to, in a manner consistent with the procedural rules of national law. It does not admit that the procedural laws be, procedural rules be limit, be restricted. The state, through procedural rules, should not restrict the right to participation. On the contrary, it should, since it provides the mechanisms for fulfilling the right to respect a fair defending aspect, right to information. So this is how the committee interprets this requirement of through the different procedural rules of national law. So these are the elements under Article 12. And this in terms of the Committee on the Rights of the Child. And also the right to participation entails a preparation phase in terms of child participation. Preparation phase where the child has to be informed on his own right to be heard, on the impact of his own views in terms of the proceedings, possibility of being heard directly or through a representative, explanation about the hearing that it's going to take part in. So all elements that are indispensable so that an opinion can be formed and to take a decision about participation or not in the process. And then the hearing should be conducted in a favorable, behind closed doors, preventing, avoiding formalism, that is, the formalism of a public hearing, and also respecting the confidentiality and privacy of the child. And it's essential that we have an assessment phase of the child's capacity, and if the child is able to form his or her own view, which is a relatively independent, the decision maker has to consider this opinion as important to be taken into account. And the committee still recommends be developed good practices that the states be study, analyze, and develop good practices to assess the child's to know if the child is capable of forming his own views. A feedback phase is fundamental in terms of the fact that the committee, that the decision makers inform the child on the way his or her own views were taken into account, and if not, what were the reasons behind it? And also essential and to have a complaint or recoursing mechanisms in view of some of the decisions that will take place. Mechanisms like ombudsman, children's ombudsman, judicial recourses, and these are also considered as being important in fulfilling this right to participation or realization of this right. to implement this right, the committee mentions that it's also important for the states to revise amended legislation to introduce mechanisms assuring the children the access to adequate information, support, and information given to their views, as well as complaints and recourse is fundamental to revise, remove reservations to Article 12. Portugal doesn't have any reservation, so we fully are in accordance to fundamental to have independent human rights institutions in terms of child's rights, like rights of the child, like the ombudsman. Children's ombudsman are important to assure training of all professionals working with children and working for children, essential to create the proper conditions to encourage children to express his or her own views, to support them and to make sure that they're views are taken into account, to assess the existing mechanisms and to fight negative attitudes, stereotypes about the capacity children have to participate, which has been considered as the main obstacles to their participation. This vision that children as human beings with a diminished capacity, this is considered not only by this committee, but different bodies in charge of these different aspects, the main obstacle to children's participation. This is visible not only in the public sphere, but also very much in the private one. And the measures on education, parental training, vocational training has to fight that idea, contrary to the children's view in the convention, considered as by the committee as a fundamental strategy to enforce the convention as a whole. As I've mentioned, Article 12 is a general principle that inspires the convention's text, and Article 12 and the Article 12 that we are discussing here. Now, the right to participation is applied to all contexts affecting the child in judicial proceedings like parents separating, alternative care, adoption, also different penal legal proceedings, that is, as a child, as delinquent, as an offender in the legal legislation, and also children that are victims and a child as a witness. So the rights have a right to give their opinions, views being considered, and the state parties have to take this into account. And also, in any administrative procedure, at school, in the family, in health, the committee underlines that establishing a minimum age for consent in terms of providing health care should not prevent the child below that age be heard and be taken into consideration regarding to the care provided. That is, even a state determines that the state's legislation determines that to be submitted to surgery, a child 16 years of age has to provide consent. Although the legislation states it and the committee is not opposed to this, to establish this limit of 16 years of age, but it states that even if the child is under 16, that the state party cannot prevent that younger children are not heard and that their opinion be not taken into consideration, because once they're capable of forming his or her own views, this view has to be considered and has to be taken seriously, has to be seriously taken into account, and in health again, where the committee has mentioned quite a lot concerning that aspect. Now, at school, the committee mentions education in terms of human rights, not only as to create a favorable context to children's participation and fulfilling human rights in general, but as an instrument that allows the child to fulfill in an informed way his or her rights, using children in schools' resumes in defining health policies. It also recommends listening to children on other all educational policy, cooperation, mutual support in a classroom, eliminating discrimination, preventing bullying. All and human rights are like cherries. Will favor the fulfillment of others. It's the same thing with violations. So all are important so as to fulfill that right, and this is necessary, according to the committee, and not only, to create a favorable context to fulfilling human rights in school and in the classroom. Recommending a legal provision that the states shouldn't leave this in terms of discretionary aspects, but establish legally the existence of class reps at different levels, supporting the development of independent student organizations, student bodies, and so on, as important elements to children's participation in a school context. Also, the importance of participation in leisure sports culture in the workplace, either for children above the age that it's they're authorized, they're allowed to work, and for children in relation to preventing illegal child labor, also very important, the participation of children to prevent, punish violence. The committee underlines that many forms of violence exist because children are seen as subject with a diminished capacity, and that some types of forms of violence are legitimate and they abide by it. So underlining children's participation concerning the prevention and punishing violent situations, developing strategies in terms of violence, immigration, asylum. Children, migrant and asylum seekers are repeatedly pointed by the committee as one of the groups with more difficulty in fulfilling this right to participation, and it's a group, and this is important. These are important to have specific measures, and in particular, to make sure that this be fulfilled. I want to speak about the relationship of this relationship of Article 12 with other provisions of this convention. It's linked to all aspects relating to this convention. It inspires the convention, and it's also it reflects, mirrors the child's views, which is underlining this text on the Convention on the Rights of the Child. But there are other relations with other articles I'd like to underline. For instance, Article 3, which is quite known, reflecting the principle of the best interest of the child. Best interest of the child is considered by the committee as an objective to be achieved by the state parties and decision makers that mention these aspects. And Article 12 is seen as an instrument which is indispensable for the right to achieve the best interests of the child, because it will be very difficult without taking into account the child's autonomy in the best interest of the child. It's a full right and not only relating to protection measures. These are complementary factors. It's a fundamental instrument to achieve others. And then the principle of non-discrimination, reflected in Article 2 on the Convention of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. This right to participation is applied to all children, even younger children, asylum seekers, children with disability, migrants, all are able to form his or her own view and non-verbally. And so the states have to create mechanisms so that this view could be expressed. and in some way considered. Article 6, life to survival, and this right of the child to being heard and participation is also considered as an instrument without which it would be very difficult for a child to achieve its full potential. Once again, all these aspects relate to one another. Then Article 13, freedom of expression. Article 13, freedom of expression. 17, right to access information requirements, which are indispensable for the child to participate, although this right to participation goes much beyond that. Last of all, and I had promised to mention the conclusions of the Committee on the Rights of the Child concerning Portugal conclusions in 2014. And when the last report was analyzed, last report on Portugal, the Committee noted and underlined as positive efforts to assure the opinion of children protection process involving parental processes, adoption, justice of minors, and also considered positive of the Ombudsman in assuring the child's right to participation. However, Portugal is concerned with the fact that this principle may not be duly enforced in practice in spite of being enshrined legally. And this was just more than a legal issue. And the committee was not convinced that this right has been enforced in practice and in all relevant areas. It recommended to strengthen efforts to assure that this right to be heard be applied in all legal and administrative proceedings affecting children, and also recommended specific measures in terms of education and also in the family concerning assessing the educational system and to assess the high dropout rates so as to better respond to the educational needs of these children. The committee tried to analyze Portugal's situation in terms of education and many others, and in this context referred specifically to education and analyzing Portugal in terms of education, considered that involving children and their participation is fundamental to respond to problems that it identified in these areas, and afterwards recommended that Portugal guarantees the adequate systematic training of all professionals in justice, social security, and others, so that be taken into account the child's views in all matters affecting the child with the age and with its age and maturity. It's a pleasure for me to participate at this seminar. It's an important step to raise the awareness of many professionals that are participating and that are listening to me and will be hearing the other speakers. And I hope that this is a good step so that Portugal can also move forward in this area, which is indispensable to what can be done regarding the protection of children. Thank you very much.
Muito obrigada, Dr. Raquel, pela sua...
Thank you very much, Dr. Raquel, for your very detailed analysis of Article 12. So it's a very revolutionary article, the way we think about the family, the community, and the institutions. But now we're going to have a coffee break. We're late. We shall be back here in... at 11:25. So as we can hear the distinguished speakers from our next session. Thank you very much.
Mas muta, muta, muta.
retomamos a nossa manhã.
Well, let's resume our session. And we're going to go on to a session, the importance of participation, and we're going to have Isabel Rodriguez, who is our moderator. Good morning, everybody. Allow me to begin by congratulating the Deputy President of the National Council for organising this event. And I would like to embrace the way we do in the Atlantic, because we're both from the Azores. And so it's a great pleasure for me to be among such important people, and people that children owe so much to in terms of the defence of the right. I'm talking about Joana March Vidal, Armand Leandro, and later on I will be able to introduce and to challenge you with a number of questions about the importance of participation. I would like to mention how important this seminar is, and the fact that it is taking place here in Parliament. As was mentioned in the opening session of the Deputy President of the Parliament, so the MPs are perhaps the main addressees of our reflection around the questions of the participation of children in the decision-making process. And so, anticipating the outcome of this roundtable, I would like to leave you with this a challenge. I'd appreciate it if you could convey our message to your different forums. I would also like to greet the delegation from Norway. I do this with great pleasure. I know many of the projects sponsored by EA grants, and I can say, and I would like to leave it clear that you have made such a difference in the life of many children, and I think that is your aim in life, and from what I know, it has been a huge success. And thank you very much for the opportunity you have given to many children here in mainland Portugal and in my region, in the autonomous region of the Azores. As I have already said, this is a challenge because I who know a lot about the rights of children, but after a very pertinent analysis that Raquel Tavares made on the 12th article, I would say that it's important to point out one or two aspects, that is a general comment of the committee to the 12th article and the recommendation of the Council of Europe. Well, what I would like to say is that the committee has affirmed this right as a right of the child as an individual, but the right of groups of children, which is a little bit different from what we are used to talking about. So the fact that states should encourage children to create their own free opinion. Another aspect that was developed in the conference before us, to provide an environment that would enable children to ensure that their rights were heard. And as, for example, they should have access to information for this. The committee already mentioned that the opinions of children should be considered in the decision-making policy, in the drafting of policies and the evaluation. And this is another aspect which I consider very important, that is to monitor this. And hopefully we'll be able to think about this. Are we monitoring things sufficiently well? And do we know how this right is being implemented? And so the right of the child to be heard should be only the starting point for an intense exchange between adults and children in the development of programs and measures in all contexts relevant to children's lives. So the movement began by Greta Thunberg, the young Swedish girl, makes us think, what does this mean, the relevant context for the life of the children? And I think that perhaps this could be another line of thought. And so the other thing I would like to mention, the recommendation of the Council of Ministers of Europe, the risk recommendation asserts the conviction that the right to be heard and to take into and have their opinion heard is fundamental for the dignity of the human being and the development of children and the youth. And the contribution that they can give are a single resource, I would say, extremely important for the strengthening of human rights and social cohesion in European societies. I would also like to say that the principle of non-discrimination, the absence of the limits, age limits, mentioned the fact that we have to adjust the way we hear things, there is nothing worse in the process of protection from that regards a child, for example, who is 2 or 3 years old, and to understand that the decision was taken without the child being heard. And then they said, but she can't talk. She can't talk, but I have the duty to know how to observe and interpret what that child has to say to me. And so this absence of age limit and the participation as a process, which requires a continuous commitment, both in terms of time and resources. That is, we have to know how far we will go to allocate resources to hear somebody whose opinion we value, but not that much because we don't think they are in a position to be able to express their opinion. This recommendation also talks about the importance of the monitoring of this person. Not wanting to go on much longer, I would like to say that today we are beginning in a number of great opportunities of participation, not only through associations, student associations, but other associations of youth, the municipal and regional councils. And the participation of the youngsters on the political agenda. So before I introduce my my guests, I would like to know whether these forms of participation are enough to sustain this right and to integrate them in our decisions, to integrate the perspectives of the child. And the way participation occurs through these mechanisms, is it sufficient? Does it guarantee true equal opportunities? Do the youth feel heard? And whether they feel truly valued in terms of their opinion? Now, these are just challenges that I leave you with. Who I would now like to introduce. Dr. Suana Marks-Vidal, who requires no introduction. But I think I want to, because she is a woman who was the first the female general attorney in Portugal. Then Joana Max Vidal was the first president of the protection of the of Cascais. She had she taught in these judiciary research centres. She participated in a number of important legislative reforms, as was the alterations to legislation regarding adoption. She was the vice president of the Portuguese Association of the Right of Minors and Family, and the first president of APAV. Dr. Marcos Vidal has a long course in the defense of human rights and the defense of children in particular. On my right, I have the doctor, Judge Armand Leandro, and allow me to say the following about him, that he is retired because it would be I would like to say that we we're somebody who the country really owes a lot. So this was very well recognised twice by the President of the Republic, who honoured him with the degree of the Great Cross of the Order of Merit and the greatest official of the Infante Dom Henrique, for those who provide relevant services to Portugal, which was obviously the case, because I'm not authorised to say anything more. I would just like to say that for him, he is an absolutely extremely important president as the president of the National Committee First of the Protection of Children and Youth at Risk. And he was encouraged as to this. Then Dr. Anne Isabel Guerrero has a CV which is also quite remarkable in this area. She was the assistant coordinator of the UNICEF in Bosnia and Herzegovina. She was the social, she was in the Anti-Poverty Association. And she's now a consultant, an independent consultant of the rights of children for entities like UNICEF and the World Health Organization, Council of Europe, Save the Children, Defense of Children International. So, as you can see, we have a range of specialists who are no doubt going to enrich us with their words. Because we are talking about the youth, and they are going through the recent times, we have through a statement which they wanted to provide by video. We have two youths, Catherine Oliveira, 17 years old, who is a student in E-level, and since 2015, so she started very young. She is the digital leader of the project of the Direct Department of Education. And at the beginning of this year, she became European Ambassador for the Youth for Security and Internet from the European Commission. And she is a part of the Better Internet for Kids Youth Panel and Safer Internet Forum. Finally, then, engineer, he doesn't like to be called this, but he's already got a degree in engineering. He's got to Pedro Martins, who's doing his master's in IT, and she's the European Ambassador for the Youth of Safety and Internet through the Better Internet Certificate. And, he has been part of this since the age of 12. So I'd like to introduce the engineer Jean Pedro as that very relaxed person who, in an auditorium with over 400 people, and the Azores, students and officers, stood us all standing up saying spaghetti. And so, with no further ado, let's hear the statement by engineer Jean Pedro Martins.
estudante de mestrado e investigador em sistemas inteligentes na Universidade de Coimbra. Desde há cerca de 8 anos que desempenho.
I've been the European ambassador for the best internet for kids. This initiative of the European Union, and I integrated the project when I was 12 years old. Unfortunately, due to the moment of evaluation in Coimbra, I couldn't be here in person. But I wanted to reflect about the role of the youth and public institutions, and so I would like to thank you very much for inviting me to discuss the topic. As ambassador for youth, my idea is to convey the ideas of youth with like Google or Facebook to governmental entities and initiatives and projects that and different initiatives promoted by the United Nations, and in order to improve the experience of the youth and IT. I took part in these initiatives as the youth, as it is. I have a number of difficulties in seeing my opinion recognized. The youth still get a lot to say, and in terms of the to put forward the number of, and so it's important to say that those who govern at the moment should have a word to say about what may affect the future. One of the things related to the participation has got to do with the way youth express themselves, but of course this has got to do with the age. You don't expect a youth to have such a very sophisticated way of speaking, and we have to assume and value the role of the youth among the youth themselves and in the decision making forums. And two, there was a workshop in The Hague which was called The Rights of the Children and the Young, the Youth in the Digital Context. There are more initiatives that try and encourage the position of youth in decision-making mechanisms. I mean, there are a number of ones related to entrepreneurship, youth parliament, for example, and the massification of access to information. This means that we have improved the quantity and quality of microphones given to the youth, but is there anybody near there? So the lack of belief in the message is conveyed by the youth is such a difficult question, and there seems to be a lack of interest. And so these consequences have their repercussions, so that as we can see in recent European elections. So if it's more or less efficient, there is an example that should be transposed to other areas. I would like to see a greater number of the youth discussing education, economic and environmental sustainability with national and international. I will continue to work for this, and of course one day it will no longer be me, but I look forward to hearing the new generation who will speak after me, and even my younger sister is going to do this. And so youth, express yourselves, and adults, listen to the youth, and you won't forget this. And thank you very much for that. Thank you very much. I'm afraid the sound was not very good. Kick it, busted it. And now we're going to hear Caterina Oliveira who is participated in a video message.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I would like to, first of all, I'd like to greet everyone, and especially the people integrating my panel, the speakers, that is. And also, I'd like to apologize for the fact that I'm not there with you. And I'm very pleased because I was born in this technological era, because unfortunately, I couldn't be there. But nonetheless, I'm very happy to still be with you. And so let's go into what is of interest, that is the participation of children and youth. And yes, I have something to say, because I'm young, I'm a minor, I'm 17 years of age, and we're talking about what my generation and what my colleagues can or cannot do in this case, can or cannot decide on. Now, fortunately, and this is true, and since we are evolving, there's been a greater opportunity to participate in public decisions. And today I wouldn't be talking with you, nor would there be initiatives like the participatory budget, like the youth parliament, all these things that fortunately exist and that really make us very happy. And these are very important to us because it's an opportunity, minimum opportunity, to realize our rights as citizens and to be prepared. That is, next year, I will have the possibility to vote. And it's very important to learn how to manage my views, decisions that I agree, disagree with, and at an early age, so that when you're 18 and not really know what to do. Now, there are great initiatives, but unfortunately, they're not enough. And I study in a public school, and I'm very proud to study in a public school, and I feel that many of my colleagues, many of my classmates, that is, and I don't think there's a very big difference between regions in Portugal, like or distinction between public or private schools. It's been mentioned, that is, it's been mentioned in the different conferences I took part in. And in my opinion, it's not as such, but I think that my classmates think differently, because our opinion is not important. And what happens in the in Parliament, European Commission, or it's very far away. Why should we vote when we're 18? Because if we vote, it's not going to make a difference. So, and the decisions of those that are in Lisbon and in Brussels, so we're in our we're in a corner and we're going to do what we're told. So this is a bit unfortunate. It makes no sense in the 21st century to think like that. So concerning this aspect of being present in more decision-making process, that we have a more public participation, more active, is very important, because it's a way of being informed. Because in the end, decisions haven't been taken. They're not only taken in a very far away place, and so we're still... Let us make some research about this new project being launched by the government, and not only concerning these different questions which are being addressed. And there are questions which are much more obvious, like education, and this is what we are experiencing, in spite of being students in school, outside of school, and I think we should not just be restricted to that. Eventually, science, technology, and there are questions which aren't as predictable in terms of participation concerning the labor market, justice, national defense, But these are questions to be informed about. And in addition to what I've just said, we are young people and we live our life, but we also know what's happening around us in the community, and I think it's like that. This is what I believe in. And the fact that we are being heard, it's always different, because most things work like cycles, and at a given moment, views, opinions, some are, I wouldn't say that they would be similar, but they're almost formatted. The way we think is very different from the way adults think. So, no, we don't really need to understand much more. And being heard concerning these less predictable issues can be an important factor. It gives us new perspectives about, it gives us a new outlook about what could or not happen. And I think that is all. And I apologize if I was too long, says the young lady. And hope that you have a very fruitful debate, that this session be very productive. And thank you very much.
Os jovens João e Catarina.
Our young people, João and Catarina, in addition to the different questions raised, they spoke with a very nice smile on their faces, a way to debate participation with a smile on our face.
It's
an interesting question that I'd like to ask and listen to by João Martins. Engineer João Martins referred that the young people inherited the decision of those that rule, decide presently. And Catarina enhanced the fact that young people know what's happening around them. They know. And being heard adds a different view than one which has been formatted. So I would like to ask, if this circumstance of inheriting what we decide, or of being passed down to them what we do, of inheriting, we strengthen their legitimacy as players of these decision-making process of design, implementation of public policies, and if it also allows from that condition of errors, that is, what we think is traditionally accept, that is, of the child pronouncing himself or herself on what relates to his or her personal life. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. First of all, I'd like to greet the organizers and like to congratulate you for this initiative. And also would like to greet, very pleased to greet the different participants in this panel that I've known for a very long time and that I respect. And I've learned quite a lot over time. And what I think about the rights of the child and human rights. And so they were inspired on what were mentioned by Judge Herman Leandro and Isabel, because Ana Guerreiro, that I haven't met for a very long time. So we are united by a long debates, endless debates in the Azores. So thank you very much. Thank you for giving me quite a lot. Now, I also would like to greet the members of parliament. And also, going into the subject, And regarding the question, I think it's very interesting to have listened to João Pedro's vision. It remits us to the right to be heard, much more broader than what we're used to, as you've mentioned. What international convention or national law enshrines, the right to be heard concerning in all matters. And it goes beyond our rights of questions. It goes beyond that because we have a word to say in terms of governments, relating to governments, that is reminding us that this question is that of citizenship and to consider children and youth as real, as full citizens that have an opinion and should also be heard. In other questions, in addition to those affecting them, because they are citizens. They're citizens of the future, but they're citizens now. And also, this idea reminds me of what was said earlier by what Raquel Tavares mentioned, that I would like to congratulate, and also by other speakers, the idea that the active participation in hearing informed of children and youth is a condition of human dignity and also participation as citizens in public life, governance in future. It's part of the construction of them as people. And this is extraordinarily, it's of the utmost importance. And this is all, although I have other questions. Although other questions were raised, namely the conditions that should be provided to children and youth so that they can really realize this right to participation and hearing. Thank you. We would all like to listen to Judge Leandro, retired judge. I'd like to add another question mentioned by João Pedro. He made a reference to agenda with the economic, environmental sustainability, the impact at a national, international level of that agenda. And this points to a given quality of the assets that they will inherit. Thank you. I would like to start by thanking this invitation and congratulate the organization. And it's an honor for me to be able to address you. So I'm going to try to answer quickly. Now, I think that his idea is a fortunate one. It shows how important it is to associate young people to our decisions and hope, because indeed they're going to be heirs, but to be heirs they have to be heard. If not, they won't be able to take on board this legacy. They have the right to. They are another generation. And to participate in the project, and it will continue. If they don't have that participation, they won't have that solidarity principle. But the globalization of the space, it's not only national but international, this globalization and the values defended, the values advocated by what João said, the environment, development, climate changes, social changes are essential so that we have the possibility of a future. We have the possibility of a fairer, more productive, more fortunate future. And this idea of new aspects like the environmental and so on are essential for the citizenship, which has to be worldwide. They're citizens of the world. So this is an undeniable contribution not only for my generation, because it's an older generation, but for everyone to provide too. This effective progress, and it's again very important in relation to what was mentioned here for a demographic future, young people's ambition, for their ambition.
Obrigada, trago isso em conta. Passaria agora a palavra.
I would now like to give the floor to Dr. Ana Guerreira and add into her reflection that in first thing that Catarina said, that we're talking about what we can or not can, or we may not decide on. It's I may, if I want, not decide on anything. Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be here, especially in this panel. But up to a certain extent, to defend this cause of participation and the rights of children in general. Now, as for the question of the youth, well, I would say that youth, they inherit our decisions, but they're also the direct beneficiaries. And as direct beneficiaries, it's fundamental for us to understand the impact of each decision, of each policy that are taken. So the impact in the sense of accountability. So that shows how many elements that have to be working together coherently in order to have a positive impact on children's lives. And then in terms of their opinion, well, if children never participate, then they will never have these tools, the skills, not interest in participating. Now, unfortunately, in some instruments, more traditional instruments, such as mechanisms like parliaments, etc., we see a little bit all over the world, it's the same children who participate, that is, the children who don't really have any difficulties in life. They're good students. They're interested in citizenship and a more active political life. But then we forget there's other children. And I think that it's fundamental to recognize that those children know how they experience the different events, life, school, extracurricular activities, justice, etc. And in addition to your right, it is very important to hear children, to hear them, to listen to them. Thank you. So I'm going to change the order a little bit now, and I'm going to ask Mandliandro both statements talk about the distance between these beneficiaries, as Ana Guerreira said, of the decisions, and those who take decisions. And now, they both mentioned this feeling that they talk, but they're not heard, and they don't understand if their participation has any participation. Now, with your great experience in this area, with so much you have developed in the area of promoting rights, you think on the one hand that we managed to find real ways of listening to children and give the children the feedback so they know what the importance of their feedback. Another question that Andy Guerrero mentioned, if there is equal opportunity, currently all have access to these mechanisms, and that is participation. And if not, what do we have to do to ensure this? So I think we're still very far from this at all cultural levels. We have to do a lot more, in my perspective. We have a culture that doesn't facilitate things. It's not changing. When I was younger, I had so much, but what they used to say was children should be seen and not heard. But now things have changed, and we are growing. And so we have to do a lot more for this culture to continue, to expand. We must listen. The family must listen to the children. And I would like to say something else, that after the Constitution, when we tried to adapt the Constitution to the civil law, there was an article in 1927, the parents have the right to hear the children, not only in matters that concern them, but the matters that concern the family. So this is an example of the law that wanted to change a culture that doesn't exist. There was no great discussion about this at the time, but it is that we have to change this culture, and we have to make sure that all economic and social situations are involved in this. I think that one of the important things is to guarantee the right to the right for everyone to be heard, but not only individually but collectively. And so this will help those whom do not have the family support. Then they can find the support within the associations. And so a lot has been done. But all children have to be heard in courts, etc. But we're still very far from this. But we have to learn to listen. And this is a prerequisite, ethical and legal and cultural prerequisite. But it is knowledge, and we have to know our children better. We know them a little bit better than we did in the past, but we have to know them more. And I'm quite an age, but I was born after the First World War, but before the convention. So this idea is that the child is another. So with dignity, it is extremely interactive. So a while ago, I found out that in maternity wards, the child's file was the mother's file. No, it's no longer the care. The child has its own single file, although part of the mother's file. But this idea of having full citizenship, full personality, is a new thing. So we have to respect this more and more. But this has to be taken to everyone. And the school is fundamental. to spread this message, because there's education for all. But there has to be education, and those educational projects must help. Thank you.
Ouviríamos.
No, we could hear. Dr. Janda Matos Vidal to talk about this question of equal opportunity and the effective ability to participate. But I would like to ask another question, that is, as a community, as a state, as entities with decision-making capacities on matters related to children, we've seen this impact is quite broad. Now, that we in the community, whether we adult citizens, do we understand the importance of the participation? Now, the convention has been out for 30 years, and so sometimes we remember this topic. It's important to discuss them, and then we have to talk about participation. Then suddenly we're talking about something else, and so next year we are back where we started. Thank you for your comment.
Obrigada.
Thank you very much. I'm laughing because I have to. I have to say that we've gone down the road with this formal statement about children's rights, and today we are better than we were in the past. But those that know me and those that work with me, it's a real problem because quite often. And we're always talking endlessly and talking endlessly about problems, about the practical application of what we thought had been conceptually a given fact. And then years after, we see that everything's the same. And those working with me work suffering because everything's the same. We've been saying the same thing for the last 40 years, but the intensity, the speed that changes a culture of democracy, an effective culture of democracy, is very slow. It is effective democracy. As it happens, it's very slow. Either we fall into risks of remembering certain rights we celebrate rights, and then the day after everything continues on being the same. This but all of us know what I'm talking about. Now, Ana Guerreiro raised an important issue, which is structural inequality, and this leads to the fact that those, if we listen to youth assembly, listen to other celebrations, we hear that they're very good students, and not always are they linked to. They're connected to families with more information, more capacity, or more culture, but there are still quite a lot of inequality in terms of the fact of this of the inequality in society. And we need to take this into account on how we're going to advocate the practical application in terms of concepts of what is a given fact, and the right to be heard and effective participation of children and youth in all matters affecting them. The difference that exists between what have been the proclamation of rights, legal enforcement, institutions that have the responsibility to apply them is still very big. I know the courts very well. I'm going to refer to it. I'm going to refer to them to the courts. We've made quite a leap concerning the legal aspect concerning children used to be heard in proceedings in court cases. But the path of its effectiveness has been slow and painful. And that is why the children complain, because they say we're hurt, but we're not really listened to, and there's the need for training to find out, that is, since we hear them and how we integrate what's their expressed views in the decisions we take. And there was a point which was also mentioned, and also by Isabel, which is assessing the impact of young people expressing their views. Now, concerning our reality, in my reality, which is the courts, fortunately, young people are heard formally. They're heard, maybe not very adequately. It almost denies their right to participate because there's a need for training and so on. But there's already a culture of listening, which is in the law, but a culture of explaining, even formally, why the decision was that one, when it's contrary to what the child has expressed or used, does not exist. Maybe I'm unfair. Maybe I'm being unfair for some professionals, prosecutor or judges, but I have no knowledge about, there might be some exceptions to the rule, that was concerned with explaining to the child or the youth, a young person, this was the decision, but we decided along these lines, even if it was contrary to what was expected. This is extraordinary. This is extremely important. And under this perspective, we have to take into account not only the conditions that provide the child to be heard, of hearing the child. I'm speaking about language, technical assessment, I'm speaking about language, physical spaces, architecture, that is how children are heard, and also I'm speaking about training, not only of the magistrates, technicians, professionals, all employees, the person saying, of directing the child and so on. This is very important. Now, concerning this question, and very recently I read, and this was a thesis published not too long ago, which was on the quality on residential, the quality of residences. And the note that young people, this was conducted by University up North, it was very negative in relation to residential aspect. This related to the fact that they were heard and understood and listened to. So again, we still have quite a long way to go. Long way to go. Thank you. Is it reasonable, in light of the knowledge that you have on the reality of other contexts at an international level, the state of play where we find ourselves in Portugal, is it reasonable? Was it expected 30 years after the Convention on the Rights of the Child was adopted, or should we be quicker, faster in relation to some other matters? And what could we do with the fact that we have members of Parliament here with us? And I apologize if I didn't greet them at the beginning of my presentation. At an international level, it's interesting. And from Portugal to Finland, Uzbekistan, many challenges are common in terms of implementation, but there are countries that have invested quite a lot in this area, and today, this afternoon, we will be able to listen to experiences from Ireland. We'll have the possibility, and I've just mentioned Finland, for instance, just to mention two cases of these two different countries. These countries have invested quite a lot in participation. And picking up on what was said earlier concerning the culture of participation, accountability, it's difficult to create a participation culture without there being a system which is coherent and effective. As I've mentioned earlier, in Portugal, our legislation was never a problem. It was never a problem. We have the legislation, the necessary legislation, I would say, to implement participation. But afterwards, what's missing are the programs. We lack the empowerment of our professionals. The example was mentioned of our justice system, but also in education, people facilitating this participation mechanisms and monitoring, as was also mentioned. From my point of view, in terms of child rights, it's one of the biggest shortcomings. It's a lack of monitoring system and assessment, lack of monitoring and assessment of realizing rights, not only participation, but in general. And maybe the challenges we faced, we spoke about equality, and this aspect, based on my experience, it's all over the place, equality. I remember while I was interviewing a young person in Finland, I remembered, and she said to me, everyone can participate. She said, my classmates that don't participate are those that really don't want to know about the subject. And I understand there's a right to participation, and children can participate, effectively participate if they want. But there's a very big group of people that are not motivated. Lack of motivation. And speaking about the committee's recommendation on the rights of the child, we have classrooms where 60% are failing math and Portuguese. And so these children are not motivated to participate in processes when the main context, when this is not functioning. And concerning adults, one of the main challenges is that we do not believe that children have a wise opinion. We don't believe that they have a wise opinion. And this is one of the main challenges we face. And I started working in this field through the health sector. I'm not a health professional, said the lady. I've been working for a very long time with WHO. And all countries that I visited and the children we spoke to, I never saw, in terms of individual participation and group participation, I never heard an opinion which was not valid from very practical aspects. You know my examples. For instance, things that we forget as adults from an architectural point of view in the hospitals, from reception, staircase, everything has been structured for adults, even in hospital and children's hospitals. There are examples like in Scotland and in Ireland as well. It's ongoing. They consult children when they're preparing the structures of different units. And when the child says, I go to the hospital, can't see the person on the other side. Very simple things. But also in terms of care, I remember an experience. I remember an English hospital consulting children with cancer. And one of the main problems detected by the children was that their meals were given at the same time. But because of their treatment, they were not hungry. So they were asking for their meals to be given at different hours so that they can eat. So again, these are examples, small examples. But indeed, these examples, we don't really think about everything from the child's perspective, needs, and characteristics. And that is why we need to have a dialogue and more effective participation. And again, and the adults are responsible, should not be dismissed. But children have a lot to say. They have a lot to say. Thank you very much, Anna. When we should have a round table, one a whole day on these many issues we've discussed. I'm not going to summarize what was said because these presentations were very clear. But I'd like you to, in 1 minute, each of you in 1 minute, to tell me, or to tell us, your challenge, to tell us about the challenges, what would be our a takeaway, so that we can give another thrust to this participation with the oral overarching aspects, taking into account the need to make participation effective for all children by creating equal opportunities for all. Judge?
Obrigado.
Thank you very much. Once that, the theme has to do with public decision, I would say the following. We need to raise awareness, all of us, and as well as the politicians, of this aspect, that they can pronounce themselves. And today, in a globalized world, which is changing, and I believe that all questions matter to children, that they should be involved at that level. And it would be good that when we legislate, to see what's going to be the impact. What's going to be the impact of that legislation, the impact that it will have on the child and the family, and its families. And then we hear the children. We hear them concerning that aspect. And this will help us to know about the different consequences so that these children compare, and this is a school of citizenship, so that children can say they've been heard or not, and we agree or disagree with this legislation. Once that it has that effect, it would be a very important qualitative leap, not only in terms of citizenship and democracy, but in terms of laws, decree laws, be considered the effect that it would have, the impact, and that children would be heard on that effect, on that impact, not only before but afterwards in terms of monitoring. Thank you very much for your valuable contribution. Anna, although you've just spoken, I'm sure you have a key message. I can't resist without saying the vision that we have of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. It states that all children should be able to carry out its human potential, to realize it. And it seems fundamental. And in this case, the right to participation for their children's information, acquisition of competence, and also encouraging their personality, talents, experiences, as stated in the different articles of that convention. So this is the message I would like to leave you with today. And it's a very relevant message. Joana Matos Vidal.
É muito difícil, assim.
Very difficult. Because the two messages mentioned say almost everything, but I believe that the challenge that we face of the real inner self, one's inner self about the right to participation and the right to be heard, hearing young people and children, that is this interiorization by all with a permanent concern, not only on what are the formal decisions and legislation, but also on what is the realization in our daily life of that concern, that is either participation or in different areas. Again, it's very important, and this is linked to the note which was mentioned about the assessment of the accountability of our concern of putting into practice, effectively putting into practice, realizing, fulfilling our citizens' rights. Thank you. These are very rich inputs, rich contributions that we're left with. It was an honor to chair this panel. Very gratifying to understand that this step has been given of the enormous consensus that exists around the importance of the subject and the commitment that lies ahead in continuing on fighting so that children feel more and more, feel that they're an integrating part of our decision-making process. Thank you for your attention.
Muito obrigada.
Thank you very much. I think you can now move on to the second conference. The small implementing Article 12 in public decision making. And the speaker will be Brage Guthbrandsen, the member of the Committee of the Rights of the Child of the United Nations in Iceland. And the chair will be Alexander Pimenta. Our conference is supported by Graphic Recorder.
No, I need to make this. Yes, I can start. Okay. Yes.
Muito boa tarde.
Good afternoon. Quite late, as you no doubt have noticed, but I would just like to introduce our speaker, who is the current member of the Committee of the UN Rights of the Child. He was an international a member of the National Protection of Children in Iceland, and he's a member of another many international organizations who worked in the area of the protection of children's rights. He is the mentor and inspirer of a project, of a truly innovative project for children, appropriate for participation, which is called the Bun House Model. And I would very quickly like to give him the floor. Thank you very much.
The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, I should say, to everyone. It's a great pleasure to be here, invited here in Lisbon, to this beautiful and exotic city. I've only been here once, that was in 1998, delivering a presentation, as I am doing today, at the IPSCAN conference, the International Conference of Lisbon. But unfortunately, you come, stay for the event, and then you leave. One of these days I'm going to find the opportunity to stay a little longer and enjoy your beautiful city here. Now, I'm here to talk about implementing Article 12 with regard to public decisions. And what I will do is I will if I give you some sort of abstract of what I'm going to discuss, I will talk a little bit about the convention as such, because that has a great relevance now on the 30th anniversary and bears a direct has a direct impact on Article 12 in particular. I will then talk about the how Article 12 can be translated into practice, and I'm going to use the Lundy model, so to speak, that has been named after its author, Laura Lundy. She's from Belfast in Ireland, and she developed this 10 years back. And I can, I'm going to use that to demonstrate how this can be applied in the public decision-making. To do that, I will address some of the issues with regard to child participation in different contexts. I'm using the Council of Europe operationalization of the concept and the various recommendations and guidelines to do that. And finally, I will discuss Article 10 in implementing Article 10 in multi-agency environment, and I will use the Barnahus, the children's house, as an example of that. Now, just briefly about the convention as such. More than 50 years ago, a philosopher and a physician, Thomas Kuhn, he introduced the concept paradigm shift into the discourse of scientists. He was examining how knowledge and science evolve through time. And he discovered that knowledge does not grow linear, but goes in sort of revolutionary paths, so to speak. An example he referred to was our perception of the universe. From ancient time up to the Middle Ages, people believed that the Earth was the center of the universe. But due to scientific discoveries in the around 1500 by people like Copernicus and others, they discovered it was the other way around. So the geocentrism view, perspective of the world, had to give way to the helocentrism, which is the perception that the world, in fact, it's the other way around. It's really the world that's moving around the sun. Now, later on, this was elaborated a bit further. But I mention this, why? Because this is really a comparable impact that the Convention on the Rights of the Child had on our perception of children. Before the convention, we perceived children not as an independent rights holder, but as a property, more or less, property of their parents. And the parents had the role, basically, to protect children, but children as such, they did not have any role to play. And this is extremely important because this goes to the heart of the participation issue. Secondly, what I want to highlight with in terms of the convention is the convention is unique, different from other international agreements, in that it is does not only contain descriptive rights of the child, but also has a dynamic nature in the sense that it is normative, and it is particularly the basic principle of the best interest of the child, which is the engine that sort of drives the convention on and makes it possible to operationalize the convention and translate it into the different contexts of children's lives. Now, here we have the Article 12. This morning we have heard a wonderful legal analysis on Article 12, but I shall not repeat that, only to highlight that when you come to think of this Article 12, it assumes children as human beings with integrity, personality, and the capacity to freely participate in society. And that's something. That's really something. The Committee on the Rights of the Child in 2006 had a day of general discussion on the topic of the child's rights to participate, to be heard, and to speak. And they referred to this article and this elaboration of the article as the new social contract. This was the first time that the committee, in fact, sat down in order to elaborate on this article. You could see prior to this various comments with regard to the monitoring of individual states, for example, like England in 1995, where they criticized England for not taking seriously Article 12, and that was very, and the comments of the committee during this period from the onset in 2000 to 2006, very enlightening. And you could see when you analyze this how important the committee has always regarded Article 12 and the rights of children there. The general comments a few years later in 2009 on Article 12 contains extremely rich and detailed analysis on the implementation, as was elaborated on earlier this morning. And in this general comment, it's highlighted that this right constitutes really one of the fundamental values of the Convention. Why? Well, in the general comment, it's stated that it is a unique provision in human rights treaty, as it addresses legal and social status of children who, on the one hand, lack autonomy of adults, but on the other, are subject to rights. And that makes it a bit complex to in implementation. No wonder how that we need to come together in many times, in many places, in many societies, in many deliberate on this, because this is an extremely delicate issue. But it emphasizes that we, when we are looking at the examination of the implementation of Article 12, we need to, in the context of the public decision-making, we need to adopt the perspective of a very broad perspective of participatory rights, as we are talking here about the civil rights of children. And this broad conceptualization of Article 12 is, in fact, emphasized in another comment 20, from 2016 of the committee, where it emphasizes the political dimension of the participatory rights of children in the form of adolescents. Now, there has been a remarkable development in terms of the evolution of children's human rights. And in 2018, last year only, there was a breakthrough in many ways, where the committee decided that the day of general discussion would address the theme protecting and empowering children as human rights holder, to foster deeper understanding of content and implication of child participatory right and improve its implementation. Now, up to then, this issue, children as human rights defenders, this topic hadn't really been addressed. It is based on the UN Declaration of Human Rights Defender. That was 20 years that year. It was set in 1992. The declaration, whose aim was to protect the rights of people who were defending human rights all over the world. Everyone has the right, individually and in association with others, to promote and strive for the protection and realization of human rights. The UN Declaration from 1998 defines anyone who acts at any moment for any human right is a defender. Defenders are identified above all by what they do and not by who they are. So children can, like others, be human rights defenders, and we should encourage them and support them in this role. And children who take action to promote the human rights of their peers and the rights of others, including adults, are human rights defenders, promoting human rights, reacting to violations of human rights, and raising awareness, for example, of the Convention. Therefore, children must be recognized as human rights defenders when they act as such, and they are entitled to the same rights and protection as adult human rights defenders. And we are now witnessing a wave of interest among children all over the world in raising awareness of children as awareness as a human rights holder. These are examples of two that you will know. Malala was awarded the Nobel Prize in 2015. You all know her. She came from Afghanistan and she acted to the Taliban's destruction and ban of education of girls in Afghanistan. And she organized a protest and she was shot in the head, nearly died, but was fortunately saved. And she has since been a human rights defender. I always remember the speech she made in Oslo when she received the Nobel Prize. She said, "I'm not here because my life experience is unique. I'm here because it is not. There are 66 million other Afghan girls who are denied education." And then she continued. And now we have seen another human rights defender, Greta Thunberg from Sweden, who initiated the school protest Fridays for Future. There is a wave all over Europe and beyond of school children striking from school attendance on Friday afternoons and trying to raise awareness on the issue of global warming. And just recently, the Human Rights Council of the United Nations adopted a resolution recalling upon states to provide a safe and empowering context for the initiatives organized by children and young people to defend human rights in relation to the environment. Now, I suppose and I could hear that this morning, that all this development has impacted children in the different countries of the world. In my country, a very remarkable development took place earlier this year when the Parliament approved a new law that stipulates to set up a children's parliament that should come together every other year. And the children's commissioner should submit a report on the implementation of the Convention on the Rights of the Child for this parliament of children. And members of parliament, the government, the trade unions, the federation of employees and public institutions, they are invited to observe, to listen to the children. And the parliament and the government, they are obliged to examine the resolution of this children's parliament. It will be very exciting to see how this develops into the future. And this is in line with my government's earlier decision this year that no major decision would be taken in matter concerning children, one, without the best interest determination, and secondly, without children being heard and given a due weight. And I think that these are decisions that could never have taken place only just 5 years back. Now, with regard to the implementation of Article 12 in public decision-making, I should like to draw your attention to this Laura Lundy model that I referred to earlier. This model was developed more than a decade ago, and it's very firmly based on research evidence of children's experience in educational settings. And this new conceptualization was developed with the aim of overcoming identified obstacles in identifying Article 12, and particularly with concerns that you will find commonly with regard to the attitudes of adults, the sort of skepticism where they may feel that children lack the capacity to have meaningful input in decisions, that children's decision making undermine authority, or it's too much effort. You could do something more useful. And she took these issues head on, and her outcome was that there were certain prerequisites for effective participation of children in decision making. The greatest issue here is the need for awareness of the fact that respecting children's views is not just a model of good practice, but it is a legally binding obligation. And a limited awareness of successful implementation of Article 12 is, in fact, an indicative of a breach of Article 42 of the Convention, which requires state parties to make principles and provisions of the Convention widely known to adults and children alike. And this is important because Article 12 cannot be viewed in isolation from other provisions of human rights in the Convention. Laura Lundy, C, came to the conclusion that a practical consequence of the indivisibility, interdependence, and interconnectedness of all human rights is that the meaning of individual provision in the Convention can only be understood when they are read and interpreted in conjunction with other rights protected in the Convention. The committee elaborated the same position in details in the General Comments number 12, few years later. Now, what provisions of the conventions are we here talking about? We are talking about Article 12 on non-discrimination, number 3 on best interest, on Article 5 on right to guidance, Article 13, right to seek, receive and impart information, and Article 19. These were all referred to this earlier this morning. And she sort of set up this model to explain how the different articles sort of interplay in this process when you elicit the child's view, and when you hear out the child, how these different articles of the Convention come into play. Now, I don't have the time to go in the detail of it, so we'll just go and look at the outcome, more or less. The model really assumes that the decision-making process constitutes a few crucial steps, if you like, in a chronological order. First, you need to create a space for the child. Space is really the opportunity for the child to express an opinion. You have to give children the opportunity to express themselves if you are going to implement this convention. You have to do it in an inclusive manner, so there is no one discriminated against. You will have to listen to vulnerable children, children with disabilities. You will have to listen to girls, particularly, etc., etc. And you must do that in a safe setting. They must feel comfortable when they give their opinion, and they must know that they are welcome, and they are their opinions is treasured. The second is the voice of the child. We need to provide the child the necessary support, and we need to facilitate the child in giving his or her opinion. All right, and this we can do with provide them with the relevant information of the context, for example, in which the child is and has to give its opinion, and what possible consequences this has. Must inform them that they have no obligation to give their opinion, as this is a free will. Now, the third step relates to the audience. The child's, those who listen to the child, need to be people who are relevant to the decision-making. It has to be the decision-makers, so to speak. So the child has a direct possibility of
expressing a view, or with a particular representative that is most then be absolutely truthful to the child's expression. We need to explain to the children what the possible consequences, the impact of their view may have, etc. And then we come to the fourth and final step of this process. It's the influence, the impact that the new weight, as it's referred to in the convention, the influence the child has on the public decision. Now, we know that not necessarily the child has the power to decide, but we are obliged to take notice of the view and examine if we possibly can go with the child's view. Now, keeping this behind our ear, this model, we can then look at the public decision-making in different contexts. Now, as was highlighted earlier this morning, the General Comments on the Rights of the Child from 2009 identified numerous contexts and levels in which the child should be heard with regard to public decision-making. Alternative care, health care, education, schools, situations of violence, etc., etc. And it would be too long and to go into the nitty-gritties of it all, but what I want in particular to raise your attention to is the work that the Council of Europe has done in this respect in terms of the operationalization of the Convention. That is to say, during the past 15, 20 years, the Council of Europe has been putting a lot of work in examining the Convention on the Rights of the Child and to translate it, if you like, into the real context of children's lives experience in different settings to make the Convention a living document to be able to implement the Convention. And you can, for example, well, we have a separate recommendation on participation of children that was from 2012, but we have others which are extremely important in the context of decision-making in public sphere, like the guidelines on child-friendly justice, the recommendation on child-friendly social services, the guidelines on child-friendly health care, the recommendation on the rights of children living in residential institutions, the guidelines on policy to support positive parenting, etc., etc. I won't go into the details of it, but all of these recommendations, guidelines, and even convention like the Lanzarote Convention, which is a binding instrument of the Council of Europe, in all of these, the issue of child participation is explicitly addressed. For example, why is that? Because, child participation is an integrated part of the Child Council of Europe strategy for the rights of the child. You can see that in the published strategy 2016 to 2021. It's one of the five priority areas in the Council of Europe. It's also implicit in the legal framework, as I mentioned, the conventions, recommendations, guidelines. And the Council of Europe has just developed a participation tool that I believe you have in your files here, which is designed to support states in monitoring the implementation of Article 12 and help them to further develop it. Now, examples of participatory rights can be mentioned here, like in the 2005 recommendation on children in residential institution. There's an explicit address on the impact that children should have on procedures, organization, or individual care plan, on periodic review or placements, and on the living conditions in the institution, just to mention a few. the Council of Europe recommendation on policy support positive parenting, the categorization of positive parenting as nurture, structure, recognition and empowerment all relates to the interactions of parents and children and assumes an active participation of the child and in communication with the parents. This is really a guideline that sort of, on the one hand, takes the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and on the other, takes the best knowledge in the upbringing of children and sort of creates guidelines that has real value for particularly parents, but also professional and government. So this is a very good example. The Langzerotti Convention refers to it in the recommendation of the child-friendly social services. Child participation plays a big role. And very interestingly, it identifies three types of participation, what is called their consultative participation, recognizing that children have expertise, and perspectives need to inform and affect decision-making. But there's also this collaborative participation, offering children the opportunity to be actively involved in any stage of the decision-making. And finally, you have the child-led participation, facilitating the initiative of children and their own advocacy in relating to various activities and services established to meet their needs. Now, the article on implementation generally echoes the Laura Lundy's model. I won't read all that, but there's one thing there which I should like to highlight, where it says participation should not only be perceived in terms of the evolving capacities of the child, the positive outcome in the future, but also in terms of the quality of the child's life in the present. Thus, children should be seen as they are today, but not only as beings in the making. The implementation in healthcare, that is a two-dimensional definition in the recommendation or the guideline. On the one hand, when children have or are able to consent to an intervention by law, on the other, when the child does not have this legal capacity, but still it's emphasized that children should take part in every decision concerning the possible medical intervention that the child may be subjected to. My final bit in the presentation is the multi-agency intervention. It does not constitute a great problem when we are talking about a particular agency or institution, like social services office or medical hospital or the school. But what about issues when we have when there are decisions to be taken by many agencies? And that is something which we know, of course, is common in situations, for example, when children are victims or witnesses of crimes. We know that, for example, children who are sexually abused, they need, well, sexual abuse is something which cannot be defined only as a criminal issue. It's also a health issue. And furthermore, it's a social and child protection issue. So you would need all these different agencies to hear the child. The child should have this opportunity to give his or her opinion to all these agencies. And all these agencies would need the child's account, the child's narrative, to be able to do their job, to investigate, prosecute, and ensure the protection of the child. So how can we implement this? Now, if the child goes between the agencies, we have situations of repeated interviews with children conducted in many locations by different people. This has been research. And when we have a situation like this, we are subjecting children to re-victimization or a secondary victimization, which can be even harder on the child than the original abuse. Just think about a child that has been sexually molested and that needs to disclose and does disclose first, maybe in school, and then with the social services, the child protection, then to the police station, then referring to the hospital, then to the prosecution, etc., etc. And this has been demonstrated. It can be extremely harmful for the child and makes things a lot worse. It's also very harmful for the social and criminal investigation. Why? Because children are very suggestible, and it inevitably happens that children are subjected to repeated interviews, that they are interviewed by people who are not trained, who are not using structured interviewing protocols, so they ask leading questions. Leading questions lead to discrepancies in the child's account and the child's narrative. And when you have discrepancies in the child's narratives, the evidential value of the child account diminishes. And in the end, the case is not of a nature that you can take it to the court. So in order to overcome this, you may need to apply Article 3.1, which is the best interest of the child. That should be a primary consideration. And in many countries in Europe now, they have set up what we in Iceland call, and in Scandinavia call, barnahus, or it means children's house, where you bring together all these different agencies, you know, the child protection services and the social services, the police, and the prosecution, and the medical people, and they all work under one roof. And the child is at the heart of this activity is precisely what we can call the joint investigative interview, where the child is heard. And other parts of this house and the medical examination room, you will have victim therapy provided as well within the same roof, counseling to parents who may be traumatized as well, and various kinds of consultative and advice, education and training activities. Now, what is it that makes this so feasible when we are talking about child participation? Now, if you think about the Lundy model, her emphasis on space, on voice and audience and influence, this is exactly the kind of framework that she is referring to. We are here talking about a children's house with a child-friendly environment, including the interviewing room. It has been demonstrated that children who are asked to give their views or asked to give their tell their story in environments which is not particularly child-friendly, what happens is that they get anxious. And the higher level of anxiety, the less likely the child is to be able to give his or her account. And just think about it, if you take a child to a police station, for example, what kind of a message does that give to the child? Well, all children know that those who are taken to police stations are criminals, or done something wrong. And that's one of the major issues with child with homosexual abuse, that the feeling of guilt and shame. And so what we did instead is to create this child-friendly environment to facilitate the child for giving his or her evidence. Now, these interviews are based on protocol to enhance reliability and the evidential value of the child narratives, and that is structured to contain all the factors that are identified in the Lundy model, a rapport building, to establish the ground rules, etc., to make the child feel comfortable and inform the child about the process. There are only trained forensic interviewing used. The facilities are organized, so all the representative, all the different agencies, they can observe the interview alive, but it's also recorded. What happens also in many of these children's houses is that this is at the same time a statement for the court. If you introduce the rules of the due process into this by bringing in the defense into this environment, you can do this all without ever having the child to need to go to the court. And that is probably one of the greatest achievements of this, because we know that when you look at the European justice system today, the adversities that children have to face in the European justice system is, number one, the multiple interviews that the children are subjected to in the child protection services, social services, the police, prosecution, in the hospitals. The second issue is they're waiting for trials for months. We are putting children in an impossible situation. On the one hand, we are telling the child, you must forget about the trauma of the abuse, but on the other hand, we are saying you must remember everything, every detail, because after 1 year you need to go to court and you need to remember everything and to be able to tell the judge. If you use this Barnahus model, you can record the child's account with the presence of the defense, and then the child would never need to go to court. You can just simply play the recording. And finally, the hostile cross-examination that children are subjected to in courthouses all around Europe, that's really, has been demonstrating, it really goes against the best interests of the child. We can do away with this if we can integrate these two human rights principles of the due process and the best interests of the child. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your very interesting and practical presentation.
And I think we're going to have to stop this session, maybe postpone our Q&A period for this afternoon, postpone it. So now we're going to stop for lunch, and then we'll be back at 2:30 p.m. so that we can start the second panel. That is the first panel of the afternoon. Thank you and see you soon. 2:30 p.m.